Five, four, three, two, one.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs a radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Greetings, my friends, and welcome once again to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett, and I'm recording this episode from the friendly confines of Barrett Sports Media headquarters after spending a few days on the road last week in Charlotte, North Carolina, with local market leader 102.5 and 610 The Fan, WFNZ. Anytime I get a chance to travel and collaborate with industry people and show them a few ways to get better at the craft, I thoroughly enjoy it. Plus, one of the additional benefits is that it leads to an opportunity to talk with people in person for the podcast, which I took full advantage of by sitting down with WFNZ's morning host, Chris McClain of the Mac Attack. That conversation is coming your way in just a little bit. A quick heads up, the content on the website has been a little slow recently due to being occupied with some out-of-market business. I've been fortunate to add some talented columnists who are contributing weekly pieces. Brandon Contis has also been doing a great job posting news on the sports television industry. I am, though, looking for help writing daily sports radio news stories and monthly feature pieces. So if you're looking to increase your profile, pass along a writing sample and resume by email at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. Now that we've taken care of that business, let's get into the five topics that caught my attention over the past week. It's something I like to call the 5 and 5.
There are 5 minutes remaining.
Entercom has chosen WEEI over 98.5 The Sports Hub. Since the government won't allow the company to own both brands, they'll either sell or trade the hub as they work towards finalizing their merger with CBS Radio. Now, I'm not surprised by this decision. WEEI is a brand which Entercom has great history with, and over the past year, the station has regained the ratings lead in the market while producing strong revenue. For those at the hub, they'll get a new owner, and whoever that winds up being, they'll inherit a brand with a large number of valuable assets. When these type of changes happen, everyone expects immediate chaos, but I don't see that happening. However, I would expect Entercom to bid in the future on those local play-by-play rights, and if the hub's top talent aren't well taken care of by the new ownership, then maybe they become attractive too. Jerry Jones made waves last week when he said players on his team would stand for the national anthem or risk not playing. Jones has a weekly deal to appear in Dallas with Sean and RJ on 105.3 The Fan, so the hosts found themselves in a great position, landing the most coveted NFL guest a few days after his comments became national news. But with any big opportunity comes pressure. Knowing that everyone would be paying attention, Sean and RJ were under a heat lamp and knew they had to rise to the occasion while interviewing a powerful owner who isn't afraid to bite back or shut down a conversation if he doesn't like its direction. To their credit, Sean and RJ's 20-minute chat with the Cowboys owner was a slam dunk. Many of Jones's responses wound up being utilized in print, radio, and on television. It was a great example of a radio show seizing the opportunity rather than squandering it. I have to defend Barstool Sports. The company came under fire last week when Elika Sadeghi took to social media to rip the company for using legal language in their contracts, which she didn't like. The verbiage read, "I understand and acknowledge that as part of my job, I may be exposed to speech and conduct that explicitly relates to sex, sexual orientation, gender, national origin, religion, disability, and age. I expressly agree and represent that I do not object to being exposed to such speech and conduct and do not find it otherwise offensive or objectionable and that I'm willing to work in such an environment." After Sadeghi called out Barstool, Dave Portnoy fired back and said she was trying to make herself part of the story and was well aware of what type of company Barstool was. Company CEO Erica Nardini added, "Its unique brand of comedy can sometimes offend, and people who don't want to be part of that shouldn't work for the group." I agree with Barstool. Brands have to protect themselves, especially when they create colorful content. This is no different than what's asked of individuals working on Comedy Central or shows like Saturday Night Live. The bigger question is, why did Siddiqui take to social media to try to damage Barstool's reputation after the company offered her a 2-year deal to work for them? Check out Bill Simmons' column on The Ringer about ESPN and its handling of Jemele Hill. Although I don't agree with everything Simmons said, he made some valid points regarding the hypocrisy and how the worldwide leader in sports has committed itself to diversity, yet silenced diverse opinions that touch on issues outside the world of sports. He points out this is the same company which launched brands like The Undefeated and 538 and hired polarizing stars like Hill because of their ability to explore difficult topics, such as the intersection between sports and race. Simmons says ESPN hasn't stood by Jemele, including Disney president Bob Iger suggesting Jimmy Kimmel be careful after he recently sounded off on guns and healthcare on his show. This all goes back to not having a strong policy in place for social media and the airwaves. Employees don't have to like the rules, just follow them. If they don't, there are consequences. ESPN will be much better off when they get that resolved. Blame Hurricane Irma, bad games, injuries, commercials, cord cutting, or the anthem and flag protests, but however you slice it, the NFL ratings were down 7.5% year-to-year after Week 5's games and 18% lower over a 2-year period. Why are Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell trying to enforce standing for the anthem? Because it puts the focus back on football, which is what's best for business. I've heard some outlandish and ridiculous defenses for these protests, and all that runs through my mind is, how is this fixing the nation's problems and increasing interest in the NFL? I can't remember ever before watching a league take steps in a direction that guaranteed less tune-ins, less ad dollars, and less customers, which eventually leads to smaller paychecks and rights fees. Why would a league allow its employees to sabotage its own fucking business? I have no idea. And until the NFL puts this issue to rest, one which the media salivates over like a vampire on an unsuspecting neck, expect the ratings to remain flat or down. Maybe when future contracts come up and there's less gold in the pot, then those involved will understand how self-inflicted wounds created their own demise. And as always, you're invited to pass along your feedback on any of the 5 and 5 topics I bring up. You can reach me on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or on email jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. For this week's featured guest, I didn't have to look far. I simply walked down a flight of stairs into a production room and waited for Chris McClain to wrap up his morning show, The Mac Attack, on WFNZ. Chris has been a fixture on the Charlotte sports radio scene for the past 13 years, and we spent a half an hour chatting about his career, different parts of the radio business, the Charlotte market, and a few other items. I think you guys will enjoy his energy and opinions on our industry and find yourself with a reason to check out his show in the future. So here's this week's conversation with the man Charlotte sports radio listeners call Mac, Chris McClain.
3, 2...
PA native, grew up on The Fan and WIP. Yeah. So these are the early days of sports radio when you started first listening, right?
Oh, no doubt. I remember listening when they flipped in New York because I could get I grew up in New York, Pennsylvania.
Right.
And the beauty is we could get a lot of different, you know, markets of radio. And I was just a kid that just loved listening to sports talk. I remember when FAN became FAN from WNBC. So I remember that happening too. And WIP, those are two, you know, things I love listening to. I love the passion of those fan bases.
Which shows were you a fan of?
I tell you, I love Steve Summers when he was on overnights under the covers,
yep.
Schmoozing, a little SPORTS. You know, I love that, man. I would listen to that. That was one where I would listen to, and I had to go to school the next day, and my parents would hear the radio. It'd be like 1 in the morning. They'd be like, what are you doing?
So, now, how old are you when you first started listening?
I called a sports radio show in York, Pennsylvania when I was like 11 or something, and I got hung up on. I tried to, or it might have been 12, I tried to argue about Syracuse. For some reason, I was a Syracuse basketball fan. I don't know why. Had the starter jacket and everything. And I called, Kurt Hart was the name of the host, local small show, York, Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And I called up, he was bashing Boeheim. And I tried to call up and stand up for him. He got annoyed with me and hung up on me. And I felt like that was, ever since then, I've been trying to hang up on people to get revenge.
Now, was he hanging up on you because you were 11 years old and his producer screwed up putting an 11-year-old on the air?
I think there was anger towards that. I think there was anger that this 11-year-old's arguing with me. Like, why do I have to deal with this? I think there was a lot of things going on there.
Take me through how that leads to you getting into the business.
Once I got to college and you start finding out, hey, there's the college radio station. You know, I went to Towson, you know, okay, outside Baltimore, and hey, you get to call the football games. Get to call the basketball games. I mean, I wanted to do that stuff immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, anything I could. Women's basketball games, men's football games, you know, that aren't very pretty. I mean, all those things. And but sports talk was the thing I always loved because I loved the debate, loved the back and forth, loved the forum of fans being heard. And it's funny, I wasn't an Eagle fan either, but I'm listening to IP just because the shows were so entertaining. But I would get angry. I was that guy. It's funny. I was that guy that gets angry because they're all homers. You got the Eagles winning 13 games this year. You're ridiculous. And now I have people telling me that aren't Panther fans that live in Charlotte, you guys are homers. You got them winning 12 games. So it's kind of come full circle, you know?
So you go to college. That's where you start to dabble in it. You wind up starting your career, correct me if I'm wrong, in Florida, right?
Yeah, down at CBS Sportsline.
Okay, so now when you were at Sportsline, was that the Scott Kaplan, Sid Rosenberg era or different people?
Oh, yeah, Craig Carton era. I mean, yeah. We had tons of talent there, man. There is no doubt about it. A lot you could learn from those guys. And it was an interesting place. I mean, it was just getting started, you know. We started on the internet, eventually got syndicated on Sports Fan Radio Network, but I was there. We grew that thing from the start. I went down there as a producer and ended up getting on-air experience when it was done. So it was a great experience for me. I will say this. I do love the local aspect of the community that you join. You know what I mean? Being a part of a community. But that was just great experience for someone, you know, right out of college.
Oh, absolutely. It really was. I look at everyone's radio career almost like a book. You got all these different chapters. It's going to say you went to Towson University, started there. Then you went to Florida. Then you wound up in Charlotte doing middays. Then you went to mornings. And you work with different people. And that's part of what makes the whole thing an interesting read at the end, right?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. And by the way, Sid Rosenberg would mess with me. I was doing updates on their show for a while. You know, I would do it. Producing updates, filling, hosting, anything I could right at that age. And Sid Rosenberg would screw with me so bad during updates, try to get me to laugh. He was amazed at my ability. I was basically like one of those bobbies over there in England that refused to laugh. Dude would put books on my head. I would bounce a book and keep doing the updates. So I don't know. Maybe I impressed him back then at the very least.
You did, though, while you were in Florida, dabble in some local radio too, right?
Well, I went to Jacksonville. From Sportsline, went to Jacksonville, do an afternoon drive. And, I mean, that was a great experience too. And I was only there for a little bit. We had changes with the station where they were bought out. They went to Radio Disney. Mickey Mouse came in, ran me out of town. I guess that's when radio starts, right? That's when your career really begins, is when you get fired.
I knew my career was really in an interesting period when first I left to go take a job at AT&T Wireless. And while I'm working at AT&T Wireless, I'm looking up cell phone numbers for future guests. And I had to be reminded, dude, you don't have a radio show. And I'm like, you're right. What am I doing here? I'm just looking at the numbers. And then the second time was I got whacked because a company I was working for was switching our format to Spanish. And the invite was, how would you like to program it? I said, how am I going to program a station? I can't speak the language. And you find out how bad you really want to be in radio at that point. So you mentioned you worked at Jacksonville. The mouse gets you whacked when they go to Disney. You wind up in Charlotte in 2004. And so obviously you've now had 13 years in this market. Let's start with the radio station. How has it changed from 2004 when you got in to where it is today?
That's a good question. That's a real good question. I mean, obviously, people have come and go. I mean, there's been some talented people, too, here. Mark Packer, you know, is on Sirius. And Gary Williams now is on the TV side on the Golf Channel. He always had better looks and better hair than the rest of us here. So the people change. Yep. There's no doubt about that. I've changed from middays, worked my way to the mornings. The market, I think, has changed, too. Mm-hmm. I think it's becoming more of a rabid NFL fan base. It still has a ways to go. There are still a ton of Eagle fans at the game last night, and that kind of stinks to see. But when I got here, I think it was different. It was, you know, kid gloves, the way they would treat the Panther players and coaches. And I think now it sounds like these big cities. And listen, I don't know. I'm sure people might tune in and say, oh, it's a little nastier than it was then or whatever. But me growing up listening to that type of sports radio, like, ultimately, that's the way I feel like radio is supposed to be, venting emotionally. And I think that's definitely changed. We've added an NBA team. You know, since I got here right before the Bobcats came, and let's face it, that was basically a CBA team. The Hornets now resemble more NBA, so that's changed. It's grown, too. I mean, this is one of the fastest-growing markets in the country, so you're getting new people constantly, which is a cool thing when you work in radio. And you know another thing, too, Jason, I've noticed, like, on the air. When I first got here, you would have more time we would spend on other fan bases. Cowboy fans here, Redskin fans, Giants fans, Eagles fans. They would kind of bust into the conversation more, you know, because it is kind of a melting pot market that people move to. The Panther fans have kind of taken the radio airwaves over in that respect. Now when the other fans jump in, it's more of an adversarial thing.
Right.
Like, hey, man, my team did this. Eagles beat you guys. It's not really like, you know what I mean? It's more like they're crashing the party rather than being invited to the party.
And that plays to the part of when you first got here, you're trying to build a hometown local thing, but if there's an area of transplants, you got to shift your content that way. Now you can shift your content in a more local direction and focus on, as you mentioned, the Hornets are a much different story than the Bobcats were. The Panthers are now 2 decades in here versus, you know, you go back to 2004, they hadn't even been here a decade.
Exactly.
You know? And that obviously has to help you as a host when you're going out on the air every day going, all right, should I be talking Cowboys, Redskins, or Giants? Well, I'm not passionate about any of these three things, but I know that's the audience I'm dealing with, and now I can actually talk about the Panthers and spend 4 hours on it, and it works.
Absolutely. Because that's the thing, I'm going back to the local national thing. Like, national radio, you're embracing the fact I got this guy calling about this team, this. But here, it's like, the thing about local radio is having that group of people that are so united. Yep. I'm mad at this guy, and I'm mad at that guy. Well, then you do get a Cowboy fan that's like, oh, man, I'm taking this guy on. He's trying to come after us. So I kind of like that feeling, you know, of local radio. And it did feel different at first.
So one thing that's remained the same over that period of time is you've worked with the same producer who's now an on-air partner with you in Travis Hancock, T-Bone. How do you keep a relationship, especially one which is host to producer, and now has evolved to where he's become an even bigger importance on the air? How do you keep that relationship fresh and productive where you're not tuning out the message when he's giving you things?
And it's funny, you know what? Like, if I were to, for some reason, end up somewhere else, I'd sure as hell want that cat as my producer.
Right.
It's like you see in sports where guys want to bring the guys that they know they can trust. I mean, it's weird. Our wives both get angry because we text so much to each other. And a lot of times it's work. I'm sure everybody knows how that is, the host-producer relationship. Hey, get me this guy, get me that guy, whatever. But a lot of times it's not. That's what gets them. When it's not work, and it's like, hey, I just watched this reality show. You see this thing? Or you watch that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode? Or what about my, you know, Yankees and your Orioles? Like, that's what really gets the wives, man. But it's just a great friendship. It's two of us that are both passionate about radio, work real hard, but I don't think take ourselves too seriously. I mean, we definitely have those blowouts, but it's like guy friends. You know what I mean?
Right.
We can scream at each other. Brothers can scream at each other. But you know, that's once it's over, it's over. It's that's. I think it's that sort of
thing. When you have that friendship, it leads to the air. It's good chemistry. It leads to natural, authentic conversations. And knowing that when you leave the air at 10 o'clock each day, that it's going to be okay the next day. It's not going to linger where, like when you hear the stories that Mike and the Mad Dog didn't talk for 3 to 6 months at a time.
That's amazing.
Like, can you imagine working with a guy for 13 years and having that kind of adversarial relationship?
That's amazing to me. And I'm always... The last thing I want to do is stir it up with someone. I mean, I've worked with people where it's like, man, I don't really enjoy this. But there's no way I'm going cold shoulder, silent treatment like that. I just try to, you know, hey, you're be a professional and try to make the most out of it, even if it's killing you. So, no, I can't imagine being in that environment, man.
Now, a large part of your time here, you spent working with Jim Solania, right?
Yeah,
in mornings.
Yeah.
He left the air last year, and we'll get into how your show has changed since then. But take me through what that run was like for you.
I mean, it's fun, man. He's a different sort of cat, you know. Old man, late 60s now. He was a TV legend in Charlotte. Actually, he was in San Francisco, Denver, some big TV markets, you know. And then ended up in Charlotte, and then he retired from the TV side. He thought he was retired. And our program director stopped by to see him, said, hey, you want to do a little part-time stuff? And next thing you know, he was hosting the morning show for a few years before I got there. And that's when I said, when Gary Williams left to go to the Golf Channel, I kind of got the call up, you know, the promotion, whatever, for midday. And, I mean, I didn't know if it was going to work. I said to DJ Stout, who's a program director, I said, I kind of like being a little silly. He is nothing but silly. How's this going to work? It'll work. And with every new combo, it takes time.
Right.
People originally want to tell you why you don't sound like the old guy. It doesn't sound like the old show and stuff. But eventually, we ended up having a real good thing going. People continuously talked about the chemistry we had. And, I mean, it was a blast, man. There's no doubt about it. A unique individual, to say the least.
So what's the one thing you learned most from working with Jim?
You know what is that, even though I try to fight it sometimes, especially at first, sometimes when you got that wacky co-host that takes you off where you were headed, sometimes it can be gold. Now, you probably have to stop it at the right time and get yourself back on the path.
Right.
But there were so many times where, honestly, Jason, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, I just want to get back to the main topic. But he is such a silly old man. He's got such a unique sense of humor that somehow it ends up paying off.
Right.
I'm sure I probably didn't admit that to him enough, but that would happen. That would happen.
So I mentioned before about how you've had the same producer relationship for a long time. You've also had a long relationship with your current program director, Tony DiGiacomo, who came in around 2007, so he's been here about 10 years. But at that time, he was producing, he was doing some on-air work. Now he's the boss. How does that relationship change when he goes from being one of the guys to now the guy who has to answer up above?
Yeah, it's number one thing we're all thinking, right? You know what I mean? His house is going to be different. I don't think it's that different. I think his style of being a boss is not one where he all of a sudden tried to change the relationship. I think he's still himself. I've had bosses who are demanders, right? Yeah. They're going to demand, you got to do this. He's more of an asker, an urger, whatever. I always thought he was a talented dude. You know what I mean? He came from Sporting News. He's got the background where you could see this is where he was headed in his radio life. So I respect that fact. He's a longtime radio dude. He gets it. So I don't need a guy that's going to be Bobby Knight, you know, to get me to kind of fall in line. Maybe some other people do, though.
We were talking before about how the market has changed and it's really become more about the local content versus being the national stuff. And what's really interesting about that is you grew up into the Baltimore Ravens, right? Baltimore scene, Baltimore fan. Tony, the program director, is a Chicago fan. But at the same time, you got to go to work and talk about the local teams. But talk to me about, when it comes to separating your personal fandom from what's professionally beneficial, how you're able to kind of walk the line with the two.
It's interesting. I don't know if I separate them. Now, I'll be honest. I was only in Jacksonville for a couple of football seasons before Mickey ended up getting me. But I wanted the Jaguars to win. I really got into them, even though I was at that time rooting for the Ravens. Like, I if they weren't playing the Ravens, I wanted them to win. And it's just, to me, the shows are better. And I think there's different mindsets for hosts. Some hosts are going to deep down just love the craziness, the negativity, and just, honestly, that's what they might feed off of. I like it when everybody's getting into it. When you got, you know, the news anchors on the news talking about the football team, and they're making a big run, the whole community gets into it. That's kind of what I feed off. So I tend to always want the home teams to do well anyway. I feel like it's more enjoyable. It just naturally happened for me where I became a Panther fan, though. So it's probably changed. For people that listen to me over the years have probably felt that change where it was like, Max rooting for the Panthers, but you can tell it's not truly in his heart. But eventually got to the point where the Ravens are just another team to me, and, you know, I'm pulling for the Panthers. And I don't know. I think maybe you have people that are like, oh, Max just become too much of a homer. I think maybe you get that. And I try to, like, for example, the Cam Newton situation with what I thought was a clear sexist comment, you got to pounce. You've got to do your job there. I feel like if you do that, then when you're praising him, when things are going good, you know, I think you got to just keep it balanced.
Well, and the reason I ask is a lot of guys who are going to listen to this and a lot of program directors who go through this, when you move into a new market, everywhere I've been, I've programmed different stations in different cities, and I've never seen an out-of-town host do well in a different city who didn't emotionally attach himself to the local teams.
Yeah.
You can be a fan of what you grew up on, but nobody in the local market wants to hear a guy talk about how much better it is in his other city.
Yes.
They want to tell you, hey, if it's so good there, maybe you should go
Absolutely.
Back there. So although you still have an attachment to maybe you grew up on the Orioles and the Ravens because it's what you were first exposed to, when you get here, people waking up going to work every day want to know, does this guy care about the Panthers?
Yeah.
Is he talking about the Hornets? Does he care about our college basketball? Because those are the things that they care about that they've grown up on. You know, it's an important thing. I wanted to ask you, as it relates to that, as far as the local team landscape goes, I'm guessing Panthers dominate number one.
Yeah.
But how do you guys decide? Big Hornets story, big Duke story, big North Carolina story. Which one am I going to lead with?
See, that one's interesting because you asked earlier about the market changing.
Right.
When I got here in basketball season, and like let's start with like the first year, the year after I got here was first year of the Bobcats, right? It was an arena deal that politically was forced down people's throats. A lot of people didn't want that arena, didn't even care if they got an NBA team back. So there was a real negativity there. The Bobcats were a blip on the radar. It was all about college basketball. Duke fans, Carolina fans, and State fans going at each other. And as someone that kind of enjoys, you know, when fans get after each other, I was kind of enjoying, you know, it was a fine bomb basketball feel, you know, Tobacco Road fine bomb, and I was kind of enjoying it. But, man, it's really changed with, you know, Jordan taking over ownership from Bob Johnson. As much as he takes a beating, and he should for his personnel decisions, but as an owner, he's really gotten the local businesses involved. Fans have really gotten involved more. The move to the Hornets was big. The fact the team's more competitive has been big. Whereas now, that's a legitimate call. Now you really have to sit there and be like, okay, let's weigh these stories out. Because it's not always the college basketball thing is right. The biggest deal. The thing with college basketball is it's not the same as it was even 10 years ago. Right. It might not even be the same it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so I've noticed the fervor for college basketball, even with the Heels winning the championship, is not quite what it was, say, in 2005 when it was my second year here and they were winning a championship.
Well, as you're pointing that out about college basketball, it's got my mind racing because NASCAR had a big footprint here for a long time, still does. How do you guys factor that in? Because this is essentially the state where it was building its name, and it's been huge for a long time. But yet, from a sports talk radio standpoint, does that work?
That's a great question, too, about the change in this market. Because when I got here, NASCAR was still pretty darn big, and we would talk about it. I remember there was a Daytona 500. I think it was Mark Martin getting edged out by Harvick. We must have talked about that thing for a couple hours. I mean, and right now, I think back to that. I'm like, how did that occur? And I really like racing, so I got into it. But I realized, see, that's the thing with racing. It's either it's take it or leave it. It's either you love it or you don't. It has fallen so far off the map now. It's almost like I'll mention, you know, I'm a big Junior fan. I'll mention things here or there, but it's really quick. I can't linger on that. And it's crazy. And if NASCAR does come up around here, the old school fans that are rebelling against the changes in the sport, man, it's anger towards the sport. So that's a great example, too, of how the market has changed, and you have to adjust to that. You can't keep trying to. That's where you kind of follow the feedback.
Right.
You can't just keep, okay, well, I always did this. I always did that with college basketball. You have to give serious thought to how much do I change. There's a feel for it with the market you're in.
Sports radio typically dips in the winter, but at least here, you've got college basketball that's good. You've got NBA. In other markets, they go through the lull of January to March, and then it comes back in April because here comes baseball. We got the NFL draft. Here, it's the opposite. You've got no baseball in April. Then you've got that lull between May and August. What do you do to survive that period?
I don't know. I was going to ask you if you have any ideas. Since you were hanging out with us, I was definitely going to ask for advice. I don't know, man. That one, this past summer, it felt like it still went kind of quick. Some summers, it feels like, man, I've used some topics. Even I don't like talking about it. You know what I mean? It's just, hell, I got to be honest, in this climate, you could just toe the political line and probably ride it out.
Right,
but isn't necessarily a fun 4 hours to me. I'll tell you what's going to suck is World Cup every 4 years is one of those go-tos.
Yep.
That won't be discussed next year unless the topic is angry are you that we're not in this darn thing.
You're going to Cam Newton going, can you at least wait to criticize the female reporter till June,
do that
please?
In the offseason. Exactly.
I can get a month out of that.
Exactly. I do feel like that. I'm sure you feel it this way too. Like that's where the host gets tested the most.
Yep.
That's where you kind of feel like, what do I really got? The thing that stinks, too, is your results aren't going to be as good there.
Right.
And that's a little bit deflating. You're going into these things kind of knowing it's just going to be hard to get the same results you got back in football season or even during basketball season.
It's kind of like when you look at a four-hour show. You're going to have certain hours that are red hot, certain hours that are going to be cold. And when you look at your radio show over the course of a year, you go, hey, we've really got to overachieve in the fall.
Yeah, definitely.
Because we're going to underachieve in the summer, especially here if you're working with less content. I mean, look, you can come in passionate talking about a movie, talking about social issues, talk about the Panthers, but the appetite for sports radio in June is going to be less than what it is in October. So if that's the case, let's just say, for argument's sake, you had a 5 share in the fall, you're going to go, I need a 5.5. If you had a 2 in the summer, you're going to go, look, we're probably going to hit a 1.8. And I can live with that if I get an extra half a point in the fall. If I don't, then I'm going to be paying the price and really trying to recover, even needing a 6 in the fall. And that's the tough part because no radio show just gets measured in 3 months. You got to look at this as a 12-month period.
No, you do. You definitely do. And that's where I get a little envy from. Like I wrote, goes back to when I listened to New York sports talk and Philly sports talk. That's year-round hot.
Right.
So there is a little envy of that, but there also is the same token. It's just the livability for me in this town, my family in this town. Because I lived outside D.C. and commuted into D.C. I worked at XM for a little bit before the merger.
Yep.
And I don't know if I want any part of a market that big just from livability and craziness. But I also want to be in a market that's got some pro sports too, right? Like
right.
That's the fun of this. I feel like this market offers a little bit of a balance between both those things. And I do think it's possible that Major League Baseball ends up here I know that Manfred's mentioned Charlotte multiple times, but I think you could in the next 15 years see a major league team come in here, and that would obviously be huge.
It would definitely change our conversation about the summer months.
It would.
You mentioned before about dealing with the, when we were talking about the summer months, the, hey, you could probably get into some social stuff, and it probably would get you through a couple lulls, which right now in the divisive time we're in, absolutely is probably the case. How do you make the decision? Because your show, you're an entertaining, fun sports morning show. There's a lot of positivity. There's a lot of entertainment value. People are having a good time when they wake up listening to your show. You get into some of those topics, that can change that entire dynamic quickly into a funeral session.
Yeah.
But yet, there's a lot of shows who do that type of radio, and it works too. So it all depends on your personality. But how do you make the decision as a talent whether or not, hey, it's an area I want to dip my toe in or not?
Some of it comes down to what's in the news that day.
Right.
Like if the Panthers are playing and there's, you know, one of these issues, whether it's Kaepernick or something else, there's a new development there, anthem type stuff. I'm talking Panthers. I'm talking about the local college teams that are playing. Now, when these social issues do come up in the summer, they're going to get more play, right? Because you have a little more time to devote to it. I also try to do it too, whereas, okay, this anthem stuff, let's hit it here at one point for a few segments, but let's do it for a few segments. That's hard to do sometimes.
Yep.
But I try to do that best because I know there's the people that want to stick to sports. I also think, though, these are important times, man. A lot of people will say they don't want to hear it, but I'll be damned if it's not compelling conversation. If you can pull it off right and if you can make yourself comfortable to just say, I know this is a tough conversation, but let's try to have it here. And I know it's going to make some people mad. So I don't know. I try to limit it a little bit. That's kind of the way I think we try to approach it.
I think that's smart, and you're right. I think right now you are going to have a lot of people pissed off one way or the other, depending on your opinion, but you're right. They will listen to it. If you're talking about it because the social issue worked itself into sports, like when Kaepernick goes on and does his kneeling or Trump talks about the NFL boycotting, all that, okay, fine. Now that's become a sports conversation. When you, though, steer it like Jemele Hill did and lead it with your political opinions, then all of a sudden you're the guy who's the center of the conversation versus you just reacting to something.
And to me, that's the last thing I want to do. I mean, this is a pretty darn split town now here in Charlotte. This state, you know, has kind of gotten more liberal. A lot of people coming in from different places. And you got a lot of universities around here. People end up being liberal. And then you have a lot of folks that are from rural areas in North Carolina, and they're going to tend to be more conservative. So it seems to me like either side you're on politically, it feels like a market where you're going to anger about half, if not more, one way or the other, based on our particular demo. So that's why, to me, I would never want to get into politics. I mean, I think the only time I've really gone after a politician, other than just goofy jokes, that I try to go both sides on, but is when Trump went after the NFL. I just thought it was unnecessary. I mean, clearly I think he had his political motivations, rally the base, distraction, all that sort of stuff. But that's the first time I think I really went after a politician. Was like, but I felt like he kind of came into our lane.
Oh, no doubt.
You know?
He did. And when that happens, you do have to address it. Let's talk about as it applies to doing mornings, right? You got to be a different wired cat to get up in the morning, have all these thoughts going in your head. Usually while people are waking up, you know, 6:30 in the morning, they get in a car at 7:15, they got to drive till 8, but they're not even functioning till 8 o'clock. Yeah. But yet you don't have that luxury. You've got to be the guy that's wired awake and ready to provide entertainment value. So what's your routine like? When do you go to sleep? When do you get up? How are you prepping?
I'm prepping all day. Ask my wife. She's not a big fan of the computer and Twitter in front of me and the TV on, the ESPN, like every minute, unless I'm doing something with the kids or something. So I'm one of those kind of nuts in that respect. As far as the morning, I used to always need the caffeine. I used to go soda. I prefer the cold caffeine over the hot. But I've gotten it down to where the last few years it's all natural. Now, I may be yawning a minute before air, and like somehow I turn it on. Somehow it happens. Like once I start screaming, I think somehow it starts happening. When I switched to mornings, like my whole energy level was an acquired taste. I found because I came in again. Gary Williams, now the Golf Channel's the guy I replace. Well, you know, he's a golf announcer now, so you can imagine he didn't quite talk like this. Well, I came in screaming, and people are like, "I don't know if I'm ready for all this." But you know, you get 10 years down the road, and people are telling me, "Man, you're my alarm clock in the morning. I love that energy. It wakes me up." So, but it's just an adjustment. But somehow I have that ability to kind of turn it on.
One part of your show that's an important dynamic is you like a lot of audience involvement.
Yeah.
And people have a great connection with you on the air. Yet we're in a time where if you look at the last 10 years, people are using the phone less.
Yes.
Who knows what the next 10 are going to be?
Yeah.
Will people even know what a phone is in 10 years? So what do you do in that case? Because the audio entertainment value of hearing someone react is way more entertaining than hearing a guy read a text or a tweet. On the other hand, people text and tweet a lot more than they call. So how do you not only attack that now, but also think about how that could affect your show in 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, and the industry has used calls less. So
right.
It's one thing where, and I love the calls. I love a guy that might say this, and then this guy's mad at him, and then this guy fires back at me. I just like that whole almost barbershop feel. This guy's chiming in from here, guy's chiming in from there. But it does make me question, okay, a lot of guys are having success in not doing that. So that's something I definitely keep an eye on and try to think through. The text messages to me are the great supplemental form of communication now. For the longest time, to me, it was emails. Twitter's good, but the texts just come in so quick. It's so easy. I don't know if I want to know what guys are doing while they're texting. I don't know if it's the safest thing in the world. But guys can send humor in very quick in a text and opinion in very quick in a text. That's the way I've kind of shifted, is that I find that the non-call communication, the best ones are the texters right now.
Well, and the challenge, too, although calls are very entertaining, callers are aging. Like, the guy who's going to call the show is going to be 45 to 55 or maybe 35 to 55, but you're not getting a lot of 25. So what happens when the 25 becomes 35? Honestly, I don't have the answer. I just think to myself, like, man, think of how social media has changed the world the last 10 years. What are the next 10 going to be?
Because it's a great question.
You're always evolving.
And that's the thing, is adapting to those changes and how they affect you. And, you know, some things I think, you know, maybe we'll adapt too quick, some things not. The text line thing, like, I didn't embrace that right away. I'm still getting emails and tweets. I didn't realize how much gold is in this text line.
Right.
You know, so
right.
Those are things where, like, an offensive coordinator that doesn't adjust, I'm not going to mention any names here in Carolina, though, on this, but like an offensive coordinator doesn't adjust quick enough, it's like, maybe I should adjust a little quicker to that. But that's what you're trying to do, right? Is kind of see, okay, how's this changing how I'm going to do it.
One thing that hasn't changed is that interviews will always be a part of a show. And people like to hear experts talk or other radio hosts talk to other radio hosts. Some guys do interviews and some guys do conversations. And when I listen to you, I think he does conversations. When you go into a conversation, you have guys like Florio and Greg Cassell on the show, and you guys have really good banter together. What's the goal for you when you're going into an interview with a guest?
The goal is to entertain. I mean, to do better radio than I could have done, we could have done by ourselves.
Right.
Right? And that's something you and I talked about this week. It's like, if the guest is on there because you think they can provide something for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, whatever it is, that is better. So to me, that's the goal. When I'm doing the interviews by myself like I'm doing now, it's a little easier to get follow-ups in and stuff like that. You don't feel like, hey, we got to trade off questions. So I think that's kind of helped my interviewing, made it a little more conversational. Whereas when you're going back and forth, you can always say, hey, I got one more. But eventually, you want the other guy. He's got something, too, that he's dying to ask. I think when you're doing it by yourself, I think you hear this with Dan Patrick a bunch. Lebatard's another one, right? They're doing, although, I mean, Stu Gatzel asked some questions, but those guys have that leeway to, hey, just keep hammering question after. I think you hear a little more of a one-on-one conversation that way. I think it's been easier. I think the interviews are better that way.
I agree. I'm going to wrap up with you in a moment on quick hits, but I've got to ask you one last thing, because we were just talking about all the good things about doing a morning show. What is the toughest part of doing a morning show?
I mean, I guess waking up, because I do stay up late. I'm not one of these guys.
Is late like 10 o'clock or midnight?
Yeah, midnight.
I mean, what time are you up?
3:30.
Oh, my God.
I mean, but that nap comes in really handy. Thank God for the nap. Thank God both my kids are away, either at school or daycare at this point in time. I don't know. Once you get used to mornings, maybe some people claim they could never do it. It's almost like I wouldn't want to be moved to another spot, which is weird, because when I was young and on in afternoons and I wanted to stay up till it was perfect for me.
Yeah, because most guys want to be the 3 to 7 guy.
Yeah.
I could have a normal functioning life. I leave my show, I go home, watch sports, and then I go to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, get up the next day at 10. I don't have to worry about anything.
Exactly. And I used to think that sounded great, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the fact that, hey, I wouldn't see my kids at night then that way.
Right.
But you want to know what I like right now? And I hope my wife doesn't listen to this podcast. She won't listen the whole way through. She'll get bored with the radio talk. But the fact that I miss out on getting ready for school time, from what I hear from my wife, and I don't know if any other morning guys have heard these, they have to hear these stories. It seems like it is one of the true gems of the job that I miss out on that chaos.
All right. I'm going to wrap up with you on a couple of quick hits. 4 questions, the first thought that jumps to mind. Since you've been here, 2004, so we're talking 13 years, the most important member of the Charlotte sports scene during that time has been who?
Cam Newton. There's no doubt. He stirs it up, polarizes like no other.
The best Charlotte sports radio host not named Chris McClain during that period.
Oh, that's in it now. Now you're going to get me. Guys going to be mad I didn't say them. Man, that's a heck of a question. Mark Packer or Gary Williams, both of those guys. I came here, I learned the market from listening to those guys as I was on the air in between them. You know?
I'll make sure Frank Garcia, Chris Kroeger, and Kyle Belly all hear this.
That's what I feel bad about.
Mac's biggest strength and weakness as a host.
Biggest strength and weakness. Biggest strength is that I'm one of them. You know what I mean? I'm a fan. We're just BSing like you do with your buddies. And I think there's probably a charm to that. I think biggest weakness, though, is I want to be that all the time. I want you to call me all the time. I want the text. Whereas, hey, maybe sometimes I got to step up above them,
right,
and I've got to get on that soapbox or pedestal. And maybe I'm reluctant to do that sometimes.
The final one. One final goal you hope to accomplish in your career before it's all said and done.
To not have to work a real job. Is that a good goal?
Pretty good.
To be able to say, maybe I'm supposed to have better, higher goals than that, but just to be able to say, hey, this business was crazy, but I did it the whole time, and man, it was a blast.
Well, you've been tricking them for over 15 years now, so it's worked out well. You can hear Chris McClain on WFNZ in Charlotte weekday morning, 6 to 10, with Travis Hancock, T-Bone. Appreciate the time, man. It's been great catching up in person.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it, man.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
There were a number of things that stood out from that conversation with Chris McClain. His advice on going all in on your local teams as an out-of-market talent was very important. So many guys make the jump to new cities with their eyes on using it as a stepping stone to get somewhere else, yet an audience can sniff out when you're fully committed and when you're not. Chris has attached himself completely to the Charlotte sports radio scene, which is why he's been able to carve out a 13-year career in the Queen City. I also thought his perspective on working with the same producer for over a decade and navigating social issues offered a few interesting tidbits. And anytime a guy tells a story about getting whacked by Mickey Mouse, that brings a smile to my face as well. I hope you guys enjoyed that. But that's all the time we have for this week's episode. A reminder, I work as a sports media consultant with a number of great companies. To find out how I can help your brand elevate its performance, visit sportsradiopd.com, where you can learn more about my services and access my contact information. In the words of Kid Rock, if it looks good, you'll see it. If it sounds good, you'll hear it. If it's marketed right, you'll buy it. But if it's real, you'll feel it. So be authentic in everything you do. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.